The first recording of episode 8 of Three Down, One Across was abandoned owing to technical issues. The second recording the next day was a resounding success. Previously on Three Down, One Across.
This isn't going to work out.
Sorry, David. My stick things collapsed.
That's just age, I think, Jane.
Yes.
Listen, if it's going to be easier, which I think it will be.
I can't mind what we've said we're going to call it, David.
I can't hear you.
David, you're not going to actually use this bit.
I've no idea.
Right, before we go any further.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Let me try this. I can plug this in.
It's like somebody, you know when you click a pen?
Yeah. Frying eggs under it.
What's happening?
Have you tried leaving the call and coming back?
You're moving today. It's up to you guys.
Yeah. Tomorrow's good for me. Tomorrow would be better, I think.
Right, tomorrow then.
Okay.
Right, I'm going to go to Mass and pray for the repose of everybody's soul, right?
Okay, no problem.
God, David, we'll have to do the introduction again.
Yes!
Jesus, somebody will have to.
Are you in a hotel, Paul?
Yes, I'm in Belfast, aye.
We'll do it again. So, Paul,
yes.
Are you in Ireland?
Yes, David, I happen to be in Belfast. Keep it down out there!
You've got a cup of tea, Colin.
I've had a wee Morton's roll.
Have you?
My wee milkman delivers me a wee Morton's roll on a Friday.
Isn't the milkman a fantastic thing, or milk person? That's coming
yes.
back, that folk get deliveries. It's mm-hmm. so good.
We get a fish van on a Friday as well, so I might need to go.
Ugh. Is it the Pitt and Wean fish van?
Yeah.
Aye, it's amazing. The Pitt and Wean fish van turns up everywhere. I don't think anything's ever truly fresh if he drives like for 3 days with Pitt and Wean.
No, I think he goes home every night.
he goes to Costco.
I know.
My dad in the Revival always said, don't have an East Coast fish. It's a dirty fish.
Yeah. As a fifer, I resent that strongly.
Well, I don't know. That was Aunt Agnes. She hated everybody and everything. Yeah.
And the subject of milk people, David, here's a little known fact. Pete Edwards, our director of photography in Still Game, filmed the episode of Father Ted that was on the milk float.
Speed.
Ooh.
Yes.
That's a cracking episode. I've got all the Father Ted scripts here.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
He was the go-to guy for comedy and then he came to Still Game.
Oh, there we are.
It ended.
Okay. Jane?
Yes, darling?
I'm assuming you've practised this overnight. Can you give us an intro, please?
Hello and welcome to episode 8, Big Heats, Big Wigs and Big Ideas. We've got Paul Riley in Belfast.
Hello there.
We've got David Goodall.
Hello there. So
we've got me in my bed as usual, but we don't have Mark Cox because he's. Have I got to talk like that now? He's in the London town. He is my darling.
No, he's in London, Jane. In London.
Yeah, not Wales.
But every week we like to do an accent. It's, we're pretending we're doing a podcast, but we're actually always auditioning.
That's
see?
What it is.
And so far, the phone has remained silent. Now, Mark can't be here, so I think it's time for a jingle.
Someone's knocking on the door. Someone we've been waiting for. We haven't got a bell, so it's really just as well that I'm knocking on the door.
It's only Yay! Colin McCready, everybody!
There's been a replacement.
Colin, how are you getting on, man? I've not seen you for donkeys.
I think the last time I saw you, Paul, was at the Hydro.
Oh, was
were,
it?
When you were hanging out with A-list celebrities.
In my fishnets.
What celebrities were you hanging out with, Paul? Was that your nephews from Milton?
The first Hydro show we did, Colin, Peter Kay and Paddy McGuinness came. And he was there, right? And he came and he had dinner raise and whatnot after.
So we were having our tea, right enough. And he went, hey, hey, get me. Having me tea with Granny Murray.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a hierarchy of fame, and it appears that Me Too is at the top of it.
But what were you, Colin?
Are you, Colin, as well?
No, Colin, yes, he did a hugely successful CBB show.
I did the Me Too follow-up. Yeah, Willie and Tig.
Oh, that's right. I thought you meant adults sat their wains down in front of Taggart and says, right, just watch that.
That would be murder.
Hey!
So, Janie, can you tell me what this week's episode is themed?
Well, why we're doing this week is we're talking about eccentric millionaires, billionaires, people like Elon Musk who think outside the box, who want to put a chip in your brain.
And also people like with big ideas who maybe don't have those odd sides to their nature as well. Inventors. Musk's a visionary. But there have to be, please God, there have to be visionaries out there who are not also arseholes.
That's
he
the
might
hope.
Not be an arsehole.
When someone criticises you and you call them a paedophile on social media, that's kind of arsehole-ish.
Okay. Tell me in on this, I don't know. Dave, tell me.
Do you remember the Thai group who were trapped?
Oh, went, oh, yeah.
Well, in the tunnel.
Elon Musk wanted to send a special submarine that wouldn't have worked in those circumstances. It was very good of him to offer. And one of the team who led the rescue gave him a hard time, saying he was offering stupid stuff too late to kind of put his name out there, which was harsh. However, the response on social media isn't to say that guy's a known paedophile.
That's what someone in Scotland would say.
Yes.
Now, why I think Elon Musk is eccentric is that I was doing a wee bit of research on him. As in looking on Wikipedia in my bed.
That's all we ever do, Colin.
Right, you're an eccentric billionaire. You can go anywhere in the world. He's probably got his own private electric car, private electric plane, private spaceship. He got married in Dornoch.
Oh, is that right?
Nice. Really?
Dornoch's lovely.
I know, but would you choose that if you were Elon? I would choose somewhere like Sorrento or...
Yeah, but that's because you don't live there. If you live out in California or whatever...
And you've never seen a castle.
Madonna
yeah,
got married
they
in
all
the
go
castle,
to Skibo. It's next to Skibo Castle. Yeah. So you get married in the church next to it. But yeah, I was quite surprised. Yeah.
Noel Edmonds got married in Lochwinnoch.
Tom Cruise's second marriage was in Rutherglen Borough Hall.
That's right. And where was the reception? Kings Park Hotel.
I went to a wedding reception in the Kings Park Hotel, and Alexander was maybe about 7 or 8 at the time, and him and his cousin, a complete stranger, left the room, the door closed slowly, and they sneaked into the room. Him and his cousin ate everything that the guy had in his room, sat in his bed watching the telly. I was crying at the wedding reception. We were looking everywhere. We'd been outside. Somebody said there was foxes outside. That was me. I was demented. I thought they'd been taken by a fox. Knocking at everybody's doors. The whole wedding reception looking for these two boys.
I went to see Dweezil Zappa in the concert hall in Birmingham, and I came out and I went for a beer and I wander in and the guy says, oh no, that's the beer's free. You know, you can take the boy out of Milton. I'm like, I'm going to stay here as long as I can. Then the finger food comes out, and it turns out Boyzone or Westlife, it was their after show party because they were playing the stadium next door to Dweezil Zappa. They eventually go, who's the fat one in the corner eating all the finger food?
Elon Musk, where he's really impressive with his madness is the same way that Steve Jobs was. Electric cars, they wouldn't have happened, I don't think, without his Tesla, because what he demonstrated was it's a viable, marketable thing. And everyone kind of mocked him and mocked the Tesla. And as soon as sales started to go up, suddenly you've got Nissan, you've got Hyundai, all these people jumping on this going, oh, this will work. It's like Jobs with the iPhone.
Yeah.
He was mocked for the iPhone.
I had a Tesla left in my drive for a weekend. My cousin had come over from Canada and he's a travel writer. Tesla.
Good day, Canada.
About 5 years. They gave him a Tesla to drive, so he drove it all around Britain. And then he went off home and he left it in my drive. And he said, someone will come and collect it. And no one came. And eventually a low loader came. I would have driven it down.
So boys, generally, they usually come from nothing. A lot of the billionaires, they come from real poverty. So is that relevant, do we think?
You mean like a motivational thing?
Well, some of them inherit. Trump inherited $250 million.
Aye.
And then you see like Rupert Murdoch, his father owned like a string of newspapers. Yeah. So he was independently rich. So you either start off kind of halfway there and then you go mental, or I think you're right, you start off with nothing and then you go through the stratosphere.
Certainly the likes of the Murdochs and the Trumps and all that came up, you would like to say, with privileged lives. Yeah. But in actual fact, when you look into it, they were lonely, neglected children. The privilege was they could have anything they wanted money-wise, but what they couldn't have was their parents around to actually give them any kind of love or leadership. That's going to affect you. The folk who come up with nothing, I think what you have is a drive. I don't mean in the front of your house. You've got ambition. And the difference is Trump, I mean, I don't want to get into politics and all that, but he's a slothful, lazy, ignorant...
He hinted...
Who owes $340 million to Deutsche Bank, and it's his second loan of $340 million, the first loan he didn't pay, took them to court, won the case, and yet they loaned him more money again. I wonder why.
But can I just say this about Donald Trump? What amazes me, because he is such a...
It's his hair.
He's looking better just now, actually, after all this corona. It's gone more silver than blonde. But his mother was Scottish. Now, do you know anyone who's got a Scottish maw who's got a big head? I mean, imagine you were blowing your own trumpet.
Do you know who I am?
Actually, do you know who I think I could be? Do you know who I would like to be?
My mum used to shout that, do you know who I am? But she had dementia and actually forgotten who she was.
My mum said that to me, boys, because we touch on serious topics. And it was a couple of weeks ago I told you this. And so that was the first time she said, who am I to you? Am I your auntie?
Aww.
But see, the first time that happens, it's a... kick in the stomach.
Oh no.
I was over in Italy looking after her, doing some stuff, and she went, excuse me, I hope you don't mind me asking, who are you? And I said, I'm your son, Tony. I went, no, I'm David. David. And then she went, why the hell would I have a second one? Now, I don't want to alarm anyone, but I've just found a strange file on my desktop.
Hello, my name is Mark Cox. Yes, it really is me. I have been shrunk down to a quantum level and trapped in a computer memory chip as a result of a malfunction with Apple Pay. That will not stop this week's question mark.
What's the question mark? Don't keep us in the dark. What's the question mark?
A farmer needs to cross a river with a fox, a toffee donut and a beaver. The boat can only hold two objects at a time. If the farmer is left alone with the donut, he will eat it. If the fox is left alone with the beaver, they will argue. If the fox is left alone with the donut, she will eat it. But being a fox, the excess glucose will cause type 2 diabetes. If the beaver is left alone with the farmer, old scores will be settled. If the beaver is left alone with the donut, it will behave inappropriately. In what order must they cross to make sure the farmer gets to market as God intended?
Well, thank you, Mark.
What a question.
We'll have the answer to that later on.
He's sounding unusually stern this week, isn't he?
Fancy London ways.
He's changed.
That's what old date are you calling?
Paul?
Yes?
Do you think that I should spin the Lazy Susan of Death?
David, by all means spin, but if it's no Australia this week, I'm out.
It's Pit Lochree.
Beautiful.
On the 3rd of April 2021, we will be playing Pit Lochree Festival Theatre. But we don't like to talk about it.
No, come on, I'm not having this. You can't just drop this in. Playing what?
We're going to be there with our tour, Colin, called Still Gone.
It is the 3rd of April 2021 and the tickets are on sale right now, everybody.
Hey.
I worked there recently and in the green room, there's a big photograph of you.
Me?
On the wall. Yes.
Rest assured, Colin, I'll have specs and a tash on that the second you get there.
Do you have any stats on Pit Lochree, Paul?
Yes, I do.
Oh, do you?
Give us your numbers, Paul.
Numbers, Paul.
The population of Pit Lochree is 4, 1, 2, 3.
Hey! Yay! That's the shortest number so far.
That's fantastic.
It's because I made it up, Gene.
And it's got...
According to the 2011 census, the population of Pit Lochree is 2,776. Or, as Paul Riley would have it, 2776.
I was looking up Pit Lochree and top 22 things to do. That was a strange number, is it no?
It's a lot to do, actually. Soldiers
Why did you stop at 22? But
because it's obviously standard as top 10, but Pit Lochree still operates the imperial system.
Yeah, Baker's Dozen, Dave.
I knew you would know the answer, Dave. Fascally Woods, anybody?
Oh, yeah, well, Fascally Woods, but she was told not to.
No, exactly. She was...
Burnham Wood, too.
Burnham definitely would.
Did anybody go to the Fascally Outdoor Centre when they were at school?
Yes,
no?
Me. I
there
did.
You go, Jean. It was a kind of like country house, castle-y type. Aye. Right in the middle of Fascally Woods, I know that. And you could go canoeing and all that. Strathclyde Regional Council owned it, I think.
What people didn't get, because obviously this is audio, was when Paul was saying that, he did the most amazing mime of canoeing.
So I did.
We'll never see its like again.
I can add to my one memory of Fascally when I was in first year and everybody fancied Mr. Brownlee, the PE teacher, and oh, he was lovely. And I remember we're playing rounders and I had my white shorts on and I thought I was really cool. And Mr. Brownlee came and took my elbow and said, "Jean, maybe you want to go and speak to one of the female teachers." And I'm like, "Why?" Terrible, terrible situation in my white shorts, boys. Really dreadful. Oh, and I was 12, you know, the embarrassment. Jane. So of all the wonderful things that we did at Pitlochry, all I remember is crying on my own in a dorm because Mr. Brownlee had seen my big period white shorts.
Public worship was cancelled for several Sundays when Charles Edward Stuart was holed up there.
Oh.
He stopped off there on his way to Culloden, so all public church services were cancelled because the Catholics were there.
Oh, I didn't know that. There is a Catholic church, though, in Pitlochry.
Aye.
We grew up in Perth, and my dad had also been evacuated to Pitlochry during the war. He got sent from Rosyth because he lived near the shipyard, so that was obviously dangerous with bombs. So he spent the war in Pitlochry, so it was a special place for him. So instead of going down the water, we would go up to Pitlochry and not spend any money.
Happy days.
It was a cheap day out, walk over the suspension bridge.
A lot of people have found this in lockdown, that their kids they're making stuff, they're playing games that we used to do as kids.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's the iPads and all that stuff going on, but there's a lot more inventiveness. And my mum, we had a thing she called Our Little Island, because we had absolutely no money. And she would take us out for a walk just along to the canal and would sit in this wee hillock, and she'd have made sandwiches, and we had a bottle of lemonade that she bought once a month, and it was like being in heaven.
When I was a child, we used to get a Mars bar split between seven. My dad would open it. Before he cut it, he would score the Mars bar, and then he would cut it into seven bits. I still, to this day, can't eat a whole Mars bar.
But how did you feel when you got your Mars bar slice?
Amazed. Absolutely fantastic. And I joke about it, but it was true.
Does anybody know just now, when you go around the parks, there's tons of wigwams made out of sticks?
Yes.
You noticed that?
Yeah, kids go and do them.
Yeah,
and also the chalk in the streets.
Just lockdown.
Have you seen all the activity? The chalk in the streets. Right. Brilliant. Did it in my street, all the kids.
Pitlochry, it's a rep.
Can you explain what the rep is, please, Jane?
Well, a rep means that you would have maybe four or five different shows a week in the theatre, so it rotates. So if you're there for a week's holiday, you can go and see three or four different plays if you want.
There's about 3 weeks in the season where you can stay 6 days, see six plays.
That's amazing.
There you go.
Now, rep means repertory theatre, or you had several plays as part of the company's repertoire, but you would start rehearsing one play, and then when it's up and running, you're rehearsing the next play.
During the day.
That's right, aye. Yeah.
And then when you get to the end of it, you're rehearsing your third play, you're doing your second play, and you've got the tail end matinees of the first play, and it was such a good training thing. And it's wonderful that Pitlochry still do that, because when I started, which was many, many years ago, rep was everywhere, and that was your training.
Perth, well, Dundee, Pitlochry.
I did it in Musselburgh with yourself, Dave. But this was before I could drive, and I would get up and get the bus into town, the train to Edinburgh, then the bus to Musselburgh, then rehearse during the day, then do the show at night, and then get the reverse journey back to Glasgow.
Which takes us nicely back to Jane's thing. I think that people who do this creative stuff are driven, because you actually have to be fairly driven to keep going, especially for the long periods of unemployment and then things like that. How long was your day, Paul?
6 till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning or something. I don't know, but it was just what you did, wasn't it?
The driven thing, if you look at Steve Jobs, when he did the Apple Macintosh, the first computer, its launch was delayed by months because he wanted the corners of the folder icons to be curved, not square.
Wow, really?
On the screen?
On the screen.
Oh.
When the iPod came out, it was delayed by God knows how long.
Yeah, that's right, I remember that.
Anything you wanted had to be done with three presses, no more. And the iPhone was the same. He wanted the glass for it. He was totally driven.
But it worked.
I think as well, when you look into all these guys, you could find a genius, you could find a wonderful man, you could find somebody who was doing his charities, or depending on what you read, people would hate them because they are so driven,
yeah,
and they are so single-minded. I think to get to the top, you have to be brutal.
Steve Jobs made an interesting point. He said, look, I employ some of the most intelligent people in this field, and they could go anywhere and get paid a fortune. If I'm that horrible, why are they still with me?
That's fair dues. I just think, I mean, you're talking about those, the detail that these people go into. I think that's where that part of the brain kicks in. I want a thing that goes in three clicks and no more. Go and work out how that happens.
Yeah.
It's like when Homer Simpson invented the car that played La Cucaracha instead of the horn, and it never sold.
Yeah, Elon Musk isn't a genius in his idea. He doesn't solve the problems. Elon Musk, he creates the ideas.
Yeah,
and then somebody else.
And some people might say that is the genius.
Well, that's true. You're the visionary.
Genius is pulling a thing out of the air, like saying, you know, Velcro strips for rugby players. That's one of Lynn's ideas. Because then when someone grabs you, the strip will come off and you keep running. We've discussed why it won't work. Those ideas are visionary. Not that one. And
did Bucks Fizz not do it at the Eurovision Song Contest?
Yes, they did.
They've already got the copyright. They don't have to play Butlins anymore, do they?
No.
Exactly. They do actually, Colin.
I'll give you an example of I don't care, I want it, was Mark Cox. the Anne Struthers fish bar. And...
He got his
fish supper, and he made eyes at the tomato sauce sachets, and the guy looked at him, and then there was a whole like standoff thing, and eventually the guy picked up the tomato sauce and gave it to him for nothing without a word being exchanged. Mark Cox is a very powerful man. Yes. Never underestimate him.
Here's a quote for you. If I have accomplished anything in life, it is because I have been willing to work hard. Now, that was Sarah Breedlove. Sarah Breedlove was the first self-made millionaire woman in America, and she was African-American.
What does she have a statue?
Of course she doesn't have a statue.
But she should.
She made hair products for African-American women.
Salon services, we know this, Dave.
We do indeed. Standard hair products were causing the hair to fall out, causing alopecia, all sorts of things. So she made this, but then she used the money to found colleges to train women as, she called them, hair culturists. She employed thousands of African-American women, and she used her money to get involved in social and political issues. And we've no heard of her because she was swept under the rug of history.
Yeah, no, that is amazing.
Wrong gender, wrong race.
But it is interesting that if you asked anybody to name the top kind of 5 billionaires / entrepreneurs, it probably would be men that you would say.
White men as well.
Yeah, Colin McCready. It's the top billionaire that comes to my
100%,
mind.
100%. Yeah. 100% millionaire.
I'm a penny heir.
Got a nice word, that. Yeah.
Imagine the drive to do this if you're a woman, right? And the drive if you are a black woman.
It's like the ladies that were in NASA. Do you know what I mean? That just made you realise how amazing they were.
Oprah Winfrey's a billionaire. Yeah. Now, there's not many billionaires in the world, and certainly not many women who are billionaires. She's incredible, actually, what she's done, and the ideas. She's not created things, but she has changed ideas.
Look at talk shows before Oprah Winfrey. She totally altered the shape of the talk show.
I'm purely speculating, but I think that goes back to drive.
She was very poor. She went to school in like potato sacks and was ridiculed for it.
Do we have any great Scottish female millionaires? Billionaires.
Well, you've got Michelle Moon.
Michelle Moon. Vera Weisfeld, who set up What Everyone Wants. Anne Gloag from Stagecoach. Yeah.
They had to do that at that lady's lunch for Anne Gloag. And of course, it was the very first one that I'd ever done. And I learned many lessons that day. Do your research. I thought Stagecoach was a drama group thing. Anyway. So Lorraine Kelly was here in Blythe Duff. She actually had done wonderful things, Anne Gloag. She'd sent mercy ships and women that had just been kind of thrown at their village because of incontinence after childbirth and horrible things. She had given them skills, but I didn't realise, and it was so, so, so serious, and it was entirely the wrong place to be telling theatrical anecdotes. And I remember dying on my arse and looking out into the audience. And Lorraine Kelly had her head in her hands. She was laughing so much at how badly this whole thing was going down. And Blythe was grey. She looked like she was going to be sick for me. It was the most horrendous experience of my entire life. It's the only theatre that I've played where somebody in the audience has died. And that's a regular thing at Pitlochry. And this is a... something you can fact check, David, but quite regularly, maybe once every couple of years, you'll get a death in the audience at Pitlochry.
I'm not sure that we're doing a very good job of selling the theatre.
No, it's a beautiful theatre.
Well, listen, regularly someone in the audience dies.
Tickets on sale, folks.
Still gone, or maybe not.
See you. The whole thing with Elon Musk of putting the chip into your brain, which could help lots of diseases like Parkinson's, wonderful. That's a fabulous thing. But how would we feel about having a chip in our brain? And what they're saying is the future could be that you could read somebody's thoughts. So how would that work? How would that even work?
If you had a chip and we were accepting your thoughts, basically our brains would fry.
I know.
I love how merry you were about that, Jane. I know.
I think it's very funny, our attitude towards technology. I find it ironic. Kids spend too long on iPads, blah, 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 which people said the same thing about writing, about the book. When kids were reading, there's problems with that. Cinema, there's problems with cinema. There's problems with theatre. All these things were going to bring down society.
Even television, when we were growing up. TV. Yeah. Oh, videos. You can't watch videos all day.
And it's the same with chips in your brain. People get very... it's like the self-driving cars. Oh, I wouldn't want a car that self-drove, because, you know, think how often your computer crashes. Your computer does not crash half as often as people in cars, and your computer driving your car will never be distracted by watching porn on its phone, which is what one lorry driver did. He ran up the verge and killed someone. Yeah. He was looking at porn on his phone. And it's the same with the chips. People go, what about your privacy? Your privacy disappeared a long time ago.
Oh, aye, for sure. Well, yep. Dave, my brother's a retired chief superintendent or something, I think he was. Never owned a mobile phone. He just went, nah. I was like, okay then.
My friend and I were texting and tinnitus came up. Basically, she's got wax in her ears, but she was concerned about having tinnitus. 2 days later, on Instagram, I'm getting adverts for tinnitus.
Yeah. You see it all the time now. You mentioned, like, with Alexa, you mentioned something. Yeah. And sure enough, when you're computer, porn. You get a Google ad.
Porn. And then you get porn ads coming up on Instagram.
Alexa, play me some porn.
Folks, we've had questions on the InterSphere. We'll go to Colin first, shall we? Because we've got one specifically for Colin.
Oh, good.
Colin knows this one because he read this one. And you know what he didn't do, Paul? He didn't answer it on Twitter.
That's because I wanted to save it for TV.
Thank you, Colin. Yes, podcast. Exactly.
For TV, you old ham.
Your TV days are over, mate.
I know.
Amy Quinn, pronounced Jessica, says, I'd like to ask Colin if he and the cast met with Tommy Sheridan before performing I, Tommy. And if so, what did he think? Nice question.
And did he get his car keys back at the end?
Snip, snip, snip.
I was going to say that's staying in.
I'll just
say. Okay.
Well, no, we'd all sort of met Tommy independently, like over the years. Ian Paterson, who'd written the play, and I'd met Tommy at things, and Des McLean that played Tommy. So the play was called The Rise and Fall of Tommy Sheridan, and it was about everything that Tommy did in his life, from all the good things and then when it all kind of fell down in a pack of cards. So it was a kind of comedy, but most of the funny stuff that came in the play actually happened to Tommy. You know, there were things that he said. Tommy... We always thought Tommy would come to see the play, but he never turned up.
This goes back to something that potentially could have ended up in court. This involves myself and Colin McCready. I was in town one day, right, and I came back to my house, which was on Glasgow Green at the time. I saw a film unit and I went, oh, well, I wonder what's going on there. So it was, they were filming Taggart, and I went and I met Colin and Alex Norton, who were dressed in their detective outfits and stuff like that, and I had a quick blather with them. Folks, this is exactly how it happened, right? had a quick blather and then said all the best and went home and made my tea. The next day, Colin phones me shouting and bawling at me, right? You!
Understandably!
You put a framed fanny in my costume yesterday! And I was like, Colin, first of all, calm down. What are you talking about? And somebody had cut a fanny out of a nude book, right? Somebody. And it was only the size of a postage stamp, right? And put it in a tiny wee frame.
Gold frame,
that's correct.
On a little stand that you could stand up.
And he, just because I met him, right, he thinks that it was me that done it. So then I have to talk him through it, right? I say, Colin, I know you're not a real detective, right? I says, but that presupposes, right, that I left my house this morning going keys, phone, wallet, framed fanny, on the off chance that I wouldn't meet one.
That's exactly what you would do.
So, David, what do you think?
It was a gold-framed vagina, a picture of one.
Yes.
Did they stick it on your costume, Colin?
We were on London Road, near Glasgow Green, mm-hmm. and it was near a shop that I'm sure Paul knows of, and it was called, like, Adult Fun. It was a kind of joke shop, sex shop.
Oh, so right? you're claiming I juked into the shop?
Paul was in the vicinity of a aforementioned shop, and we were wearing our police overcoats and our suits, and obviously big pockets, and I'm sure Paul, like, gave me a kind of cuddle, a theatrical hug.
Something and I would never do, but carry on.
And he obviously slipped the framed fud into my pocket, and like just before I take, and I put my hand in my pocket and I pulled it out. And of course, Alex Otter said, he's got a framed fud in his pocket. I'm like, oh, I like dropped it. It's not mine now. Where did that come from? And within a second, I realized who the prime suspect was. Colin King used to work in Still Game, and I explained the story, and he said, that's the sort of thing Paul Riley would do.
No.
I tell you this? Yeah. Colin King had King on the side of all these trucks.
Yes.
And one day, Colin, when he was driving home, somebody had got letters made. F-U-G.
Yes.
Placed King. In front of the King. So what do we Colin would think that Paul might be involved?
Nothing to do with me.
So yes, we've never got to the bottom of the framed fud.
I think you have. I think it's pretty obvious that Paul Riley did it. Not Susie asked this. After the Still Game series ended, did any of you take home any show props as a souvenir?
Oh, well, we did indeed. Paul, you go first.
A canoe.
That's right, the canoe episode. What happened was I said to Heather, our designer, I said, any chance all of the stuff from Winston's living room... I can take that for charities and stuff, and I would get it framed and whatnot. And she was like, "Aye, fine." So I went and I got the various things from Winston's living room and gave them to various charities, and they've raised a few bob.
I got a wee bird ornament from Isa's house, and I my nameplate draining from the door, and also I got lots of wee sherry glasses because that was my thing, of course. Sweet sherry, baby. So I got a set from the Clansman of sherry glasses. What's the question
mark? Oh, the answer, here we go.
The answer is simple. Only two objects may cross at a time. The farmer eats the toffee donut, takes off his coat and puts it on the beaver, who stands on the shoulders of the fox. They cross to the other side as two people. The donut, following the quantum uncertainty principle as postulated by Erwin Schrödinger in 1935, is both on the boat and in the farmer's belly, depending on the quantum reality occupied by the observer.
Well, I think we've all learned something.
Wow.
Well, I didn't try and guess that answer.
I know.
Can we just please say thank you to Colin McCready?
It was an honour and a privilege.
Jean, could you take us out, please? Lord help us and have mercy on our souls.
Thank you for listening, everybody, to our wonderful podcast, Three Down, One Across. No, I'm going to start again. Okay, I'm going to have to do your computer version. Thank you for listening, everybody. You can find us on your usual podcast. We're at Apple, Google. I can't do this, Stephen. I can't do it.
Please join us next week, everybody.
Three Down,
bye.
Three
Down One Across is an Osprey production. This episode was recorded remotely and recorded twice under the Galaxy Quest maxim, never give up, never surrender. It was produced at Soundsmooth Facilities.